When we had lunch in 2019, Lauren Gunderson, you were telling me about this wonderful idea for a play that you had, and that was in 2019 in the before times. Now it's finally being produced at Cincinnati Shakespeare, and the Folger, has Room in the Castle become the play you thought you were going to write, or did it become something else?
Oh, what a fantastic question.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 947, Gertrude and Ophelia. One of the other highlights of the Shakespeare Theatre Association conference was seeing playwright Lauren Gunderson again. Lauren and I met virtually 7 years ago when I played Richard Burbage in the Midwest premiere of her brilliant play, The Book of Will, and then we met in person over lunch in 2019 when I was in the Bay Area workshopping the comedy of Hamlet, a prequel, and she was writing what has now become A Room in the Castle, her play about the women of Hamlet. In addition to opening up her fabulous home to members of the Shakespeare Theatre Association, Lauren read the first two scenes of her new work in progress, Muse of Fire, which we will talk about at the end of this episode. And she spoke with me about how A Room in the Castle, which just had its world premiere opening Friday night at the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, found its footing and became the play it has become.
The inception of the idea has changed. I mean, all plays do. As you work on them, you discover a thousand things every second you spend time with it. But this one in particular, because of the distance, and we couldn't work on it, we couldn't do workshops of it for all this time. So it kind of sat and became this other thing that germinated. And the main difference is I thought I was writing about Ophelia, but I ended up writing about Gertrude.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I was writing a play sort of to save Ophelia, sort of to understand her, sort of to let her speak and sing and to know what's going on truly in the scenes that we don't see as the playwright wants us to follow Hamlet and not her. But the truth is also I changed as a writer, as a woman, as a mother, as an artist during that time too. We all did, right? The confrontation of mortality, the forced proximity with one's own family. I am a mother of boys, so my goodness, the things one learns very quickly when you are shut in with two beautiful, brilliant, feisty young men. And it did change as I did. And the real pivot and kind of the study again and again that this play asked me to do, which the thought, every play is sort of a thought experiment, right? And one of the questions this play wants to ask is kind of, what is it like to be the women in Denmark at this time with these kings and princes? And again, I thought I was asking that of Ophelia, but the truth is I was actually more and more curious about Gertrude. How the hell did she make the choices that she made? Was she forced to make them? Of course, right. The patriarchy is going to patriarchy in all the way that it does. and you can try to outsmart it and you can try to use it and you can work within it, but you're not getting out of it. And what does that mean for her when it comes to Claudius, when it comes to Polonius, when it comes to her own son? And that felt like the heaviest question. And so the play really sort of pivoted towards that and how women talk to each other and help each other survive and see each other in ways that the world doesn't expect and doesn't really support. And that's why it's called A Room in the Castle, because there's one room where they can be themselves and tell the truth to each other. And that's where the story goes.
Wow. Well, and I two things. One is I haven't read the play and I haven't seen it yet, but I have looked at the cast list of Cincinnati Shakes, and I see Gertrude and I see Ophelia. And then I see that famous Shakespeare character named from Hamlet named Anna? What? Who? Who is Anna?
Well, the truth is her name was Tatiana. And then everyone was like, is this Midsummer? And I was like, no, damn it. All right, I'll change it. So Anna is our nice, Danish name that I borrowed. We need to give somebody for Ophelia because there is no mother. She doesn't have a mother. Mm-hmm. And so this is sort of the nurse, the lady's maid, the plus one of Ophelia. And in part to have a mother figure for her. And she's young, right? She's so young. Of course she would have somebody to help her because it's not Gertrude. Gertrude's a little busy.
Is Anna a bit of a go-between?
Sort of. I mean, she's more Team Ophelia for sure. Yeah. And the status that would put her as in terms of the kind of social hierarchy, Gertrude obviously at the top, Ophelia, halfway down, but still of a nobler class. And then Anna is more servant status. But the conversation, the age of Gertrude and Anna is very similar. So they do have a conversation that Ophelia can't really understand about motherhood and about being a woman of that age and the things that one must do and one must know. So it is a story of coming together. The teams are far, far apart, pitted against each other at the beginning. And then by the end, they are on the same team for sure.
Well, and again, going back to this lunch that we had in 2019, I was in the Bay Area because we were workshopping our latest play, which then we called Hamlet's Big Adventure, a prequel. And then because that seemed too much like a kid's show, we have renamed it The Comedy of Hamlet, !, a prequel. And in those workshops, we too had given Ophelia a confidant, but in the form of Ophelia's mother, because one of the things we wanted to explore is why is Ophelia's mother not even mentioned in Shakespeare's play? What were their relationships? So it's what the biggest how plays become different than what you expect. The change for us in the Comedy of Hamlet, a prequel, was how much a play with Hamlet in the title became a play about Ophelia and her relationship to him and her relationship to her mother. So I love that we were both working on these same things and they're both happening now in 5 years later.
That's so awesome. This is why you go have lunch with other artists, because the world just bends a little bit.
You're right.
In large and small ways.
Well, and I remember the question you, not the question, the observation that you raised to me when we talked about it back then was that it's an observation that has been made many times. The only description of Ophelia's death we have is from Gertrude. And that seems like such a fascinating thing to explore. Yeah. Is that one of the Gertrude's choices that you had to figure out the reasons behind?
Yeah, absolutely. And this was actually a conversation with Brian, our very first conversation, Brian Phillips. He was saying, it's so interesting that Gertrude goes into such detailed description of Ophelia's drowning. And it's almost like a little too much of a description, because at a certain point you go, so you're just going to go in and get her. Like, you're not, maybe like stop watching and go in. Or if you're not, don't want to get your dress wet, go get somebody else to go get her. You're watching her. It sounds like it took like 45 minutes and everyone's just watching patiently as this poor child like flaps.
To borrow one of Gertrude's lines, methinks the queen doth protest too much.
Protest a little more, Gertrude. Get in there, babe.
For sure.
So it was sort of a sense of like that feels, and it's beautifully written, of course, which almost again feels a little too beautifully written. And it feels like
prepared, perhaps.
Prepared, designed, practiced, rehearsed. So our play, and I say our because amazing Kaya Dunn, our director, our incredible cast, Karen Ann Daniels at the Folger has been integrally involved in all these conversations about what this means for a play that doesn't deny Hamlet or Shakespeare, but it does contend. And it says there is always another story going on in every part of history and every literary story. There is something else. If you turned the camera just a little bit, if you moved the microphone just a little bit in the other direction, you're going to pick up some other story. So this is that story. And that was the jumping off point of going, why Gertrude? Why is it described in that way? Mm-hmm. Why drowning? Of all the interesting ways to die, of which there are many in Hamlet. Poison,
so
literally.
Many interesting ways to die.
Yes. And so it felt like there could be an interesting feminist calculation there to tell the men of that play and the patriarchal systems that are described in that play a story that they would accept to save the truth and the other women in the show. So it was a great fun, because I also didn't want it to be something that any decent Shakespeare scholar could poke at and say, well, but, and like, no, it's pretty Loctite logic if you look at it from this angle. So
scholars from going,
Oh, of course. I said from the beginning, I was like, this is going to piss off a lot of fabulous people. And we'll have some great conversations. Nothing more fun than a literary battle.
Hi, this is Cynthia Ryder, Managing Director of the Hartford Stage Company, and you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This March of 2025, we'll return to the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts, for the three-week Lort Theater premiere of The Comedy of Hamlet, a prequel. And then this April and May of 2025, we're bringing back the updated version of All the Great Books Abridged and performing it in Bristol, Tennessee, Harrisonburg, Virginia, Louisville, Kentucky, Elyria, Ohio, Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, and Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Check out the touring page at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Lauren Gunderson, whose new play, A Room in the Castle, runs at Cincinnati Shakespeare Company through February 9th, and then at the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C. from March 4th to April 6th, 2025. Knowing your work as I do, we had to put the word comedy in the title of The Comedy of Hamlet, a prequel. Even though this is an examination of tragic events in Shakespeare's play, I'm sure your play is filled with a lot of comedy too. Am I right?
Indeed, indeed. Oh, yes. There is so much. Part of it is the giddiness of youth. So we meet Ophelia in her... still her sort of giddy, happy, curious... adoration of Hamlet, mm-hmm. and she's writing a song about him. And you know, her language in the Shakespeare text is full of music and full of rhyme, and it gets, you know, skewed towards the end. It's the dark version of those of right. what those kind of country bawdy ballads are. But I still thought, well, she's a musician. She is a young Taylor Swift, right? She is in her room with a guitar trying to come up with songs. And of course, you got to sing about love when you're that age. So she's writing a song. So Tomorrow's St. Valentine is a song that she's creating about Hamlet. And then that becomes a different Valentine to herself and her own freedom by the end of the play. But so we have this young, happy, hopeful girl that we meet. And also, like, you're dumb when you're young. You're dumb when you're young, and you're dumb when you're young in love. And so she is she's a bit stupid at the beginning. Hopeful and happy, and we wish her to retain that, but we know how the play goes. So it's that. Now, my favorite part is right before the players scene, where in Shakespeare's version, they all go to see the play, The Murder of Gonzago. Right in my play, the three women, Gertrude, Ophelia, and Anna, are in Ophelia's room, recovering from some of other of Hamlet's other shenanigans, largely the nunnery scene. So they have just come to bemoan that, and what on earth do we do, and how could he say those things? And Gertrude is apologizing for her son, and Ophelia's like, that piece of shit, in her adorable little way. And so they sort of recover and have a moment together, and Gertrude does what she does, and she says, let's get the wine. So they start drinking and talking, and it leads them to talk about all sorts of things. And, you know, courage is found in a bottle, and honesty is found in a bottle in this world. And so they get a little tipsy and honest, and all sorts of hilarious things are confessed and understood. And then Gertrude realizes that the Hamlet has a play that they're all supposed to go to. So they are now tipsy and have to run up. Oh my God, the players are, oh God, we have to go. We have to go right now. And they're like, we can't go. We're all drunk. And she's like, just, you got to drink water, put on a smile, and let's go see the damn play. And they make all these, you know, silly comments about like, oh God, I hate play. I don't want to go see a play. And she's like, no one wants to go see a play, but we have to go. We got to go now. So they all run out. So for me, the funniest thing that our cast has delighted in is every time we see Hamlet now, we're going to think that all of the women are drunk in that scene. And that's why the yes, sir, aye, sir, Ophelia is just trying to keep it together and not like either giggle or pass out or vomit.
I would love to see a production of Hamlet where the Gertrude and the Ophelia laugh uncontrollably when Hamlet says country matters.
Yes. They're just like, what?
Ah, I get that. Did you hear what he said?
Oh, my God. Or just like slap the crap out of him or be like, boo.
Yeah, boo.
They're just wasted the whole time. So we had fun with that stuff. But it's true, you know, some of the comedy comes from the grit and the strength. And the biggest applause that we've gotten, we did a reading at Santa Cruz Shakes before the rehearsal process began at Cincy Shakes. And, you know, there was this one, the one line where Ophelia sort of realizes that she can have access to the audience in the way that Hamlet does and sort of says, well, they're listening to him because he talks to them and they care because he talks. And yeah. I don't get to talk to them, so I'm going to do it now. And so she sort of breaks the fourth wall and talks to us, and Gertrude and Anna don't really understand what she's doing. And so they sort of ask her, and he says, yeah, they talk, he talks to them. And, you know, that question that he keeps asking them, the question that's so important to him, is an idiotic question because the answer is always to be.
Always.
And that line, everyone just rose to their feet and started clapping. And I was like, ooh, this is going to be fun. Ooh, we're going to make people mad. This is great.
There's so many parallels that the tagline of our show is, what does young Hamlet grow up to be? That is the question.
I love it. Perfect. See, we're on the same
page.
And
in our version, it's Hamlet who picks up the guitar and starts to sing.
I love it. See, same brand, same page, literally pages.
We don't address this because the prequel takes us right up to the events that begin Shakespeare's Hamlet. So we don't address the issue of whether Gertrude was complicit in the murder of King Hamlet. Do you?
We do. She was not. My version also investigates why she isn't queen or why Hamlet isn't king.
Mm.
Why did we go to the brother? What lineage pivoted us over there? So she has a savvy answer, which is she knew her husband was murdered, which means they will not stop with him. If she goes into power, they're going to murder her and Hamlet. If Hamlet becomes king, they're going to murder him. So her way to save her son is to marry whom she knows is the killer, but as a way to protect Hamlet. And so her feminine savvy is to say, I know which way the wind blows. So to do this sort of terrible thing. And I think the idea of the lustiness of Gertrude that she exhibits throughout the play is an obvious show. Like, of course, the men want to feel like an object of sexual desire, and that will keep him locked on her and obsessed with her and protect her. So she's like, I know exactly what I'm doing. This is not, I am five steps ahead. I'm playing three-dimensional chess on a level you are unprepared to even recognize. And of course, Hamlet doesn't get it. So there's one line where she's like, yeah, you're welcome, you ungrateful son of mine.
That's great. That's so smart. Oh my God. This is going to be the version, I think, of Hamlet that I want to see from now on. That and its prequel, of course.
Of course. We'll do them back to back.
Oh, in rep. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, where Lauren will talk about her next play, Muse of Fire, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around.
Lauren Gunderson's new play, A Room in the Castle, runs at Cincinnati Shakespeare Company through February 9th, 2025, and then at the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C. from March 4th to April 6th, 2025. Go to cincyshakes.com and folger.edu for more information. Then send us your Shakespearean sidebar via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. Or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks as always to Danish nurse Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Virgil McClurkin. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Cynthia Ryder, the managing director of the Hartford Stage Company, and still the fiercest and funniest Polonius I've ever seen on stage. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 947 2841st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. I don't know whether you still hold the title in this year of our Lord 2025, the title of most produced playwright, except for William Shakespeare in America, but you must be close to the top of the list.
Yes, yes.
Because you are the one of the most prolific playwrights. You've always got so many things going on, and your next play is about the relationship between Will Shakespeare and his wife Anne. And it's the title is Muse of Fire, which I love that William Shakespeare's wife Anne is his Muse of Fire. When do we get to see that?
That one is fast approaching. It is a two-hander that I've been wanting to write forever. It only clicked when I realized it was a two-hander. It was going to be like a six-person, and we were going to follow Will and Anne from, you know, right before they got married, through Hamnet's death, through Will moving to London, and kind of every Christmas he would come back and then go to the palace to perform, because the Christmastide season, it was the time of so much theater and right. The palace. So it was going to be this, like, let's check in with them like every 5 years until he finally comes home. And I was like, I don't know. I kept trying to write it, then forgot about it, then picked it up. And I was having a conversation with a close colleague of mine. And I was like, I just want to write the scene when he comes back. He's like, I'm ready to be home. And she's like, not ready to have him. And they have to talk about their whole life. And he was like, why don't you just write that? And I was like, Oh, yep. Okay, sorry, there's the play. So it's just this concentrated time. And I am in love with this play. It is a play I think I've been built to write since I started writing plays.
Built to write and built to perform. It was so great to see you reading the script at the Shakespeare Theater Association conference and seeing you practice what you preach about pace, about energy, about overlapping dialogue, about only taking the pauses you intend.
Is there
anything you can't do, Lauren Gunderson?
Well, that means a ton. You are such an incredible actor, as well as, of course, a writer and a Shakespeare proficient. So it means a lot to hear you say that. But it's an interesting challenge. And I will say what I have learned, because I don't often do anybody's plays, much less my own. But what I have learned is the rewriting is swift and clear when I'm in the play. And it's a two-hander, so I'm doing half the play, right? So I'm inside of it in a way that I really, really like. It makes understanding the curvature of the language obviously very, very different when I'm the one, writing those curves. Yes.
Yeah.
And so I was schooled from my own notes, because our amazing director Evren Ajkin was like, you're going too fast. And I was like, ah, how dare you. So he was the one that kept being like, girl, you need to slow down. And I was like, I am unprepared for this note, but sure.
I can't wait to have a fuller conversation about Muse of Fire again when that time comes around.
Let's do it. Can't wait.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.